Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It was the best of time. It was the worst.
She was the people's princess.
We shall fight on the beaches.
Oh, wait, man. These are the things that made England.
We shall fight on the landing ground.
These are the things that made England.
I have the body but of a weak and feeble woman.
These are the things that made England.
And a king of England, too.
These are the things that made England.
Cry God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England.
England! And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Things That Made England. The idea of the show. Well, you know what the idea of the show is now, hopefully, if you've been listening for a while. Anyway, the things we love about England, basically. And we're supposed to have a competition about what goes in the cabinet and what doesn't go in the cabinet. But we always end up with, you know, things I suggest going in the cabinet, you know. So there you go. And sometimes Roy Field too. So today, Roy Field, I come to you with the proposition of tea. It had to happen at some point, didn't it? You know, it had to happen. A bit like cricket. I've kind of gone for the obvious ones, and here is the obvious one.
You know, David, where I'm from, we call it cha.
So you looked at the map I circulated.
I had seen that before, actually.
Really good. Anyway, look, let me tell you a story, I feel.
Oh,
there it was.
Please.
Top of the stairs. It's me. Mm-hmm. Top of the stairs. Feeling a bit dreamy, thinking about something else, you know, a while ago. Miss my footing, top of the stairs, crash all the way down. I'm wearing a pair of PJs at the time, all the way down. The end of our little staircase is a wall before it takes a left turn. Smack bang, foot into wall, out of control. Mm-hmm. Pain, humiliation, shock. Jane, I cried. I've fallen down the stairs. I'm in agony and I'm going to die. She comes and looks at me lying in a heap. My toe is in agony. And she says, I'll put the kettle on and make you a nice cup of tea. Do you know what? Everything was all right. I mean, I had broken my toe, I should say, but, you know, everything was fine. And apparently you can't do anything for a broken toe, you know. So, now, I know what you're going to say. So, I mean, let's just map the conversation out. You're going to say, use the southpaw jab of the international leveller's gambit, to which I'm going to respond with the colonial defence. And then you're going to follow up the British uppercut, to which I will use the Britain is dead anyway defence. Okay?
Right.
Not sure you know what any of that means.
Not much, no.
Okay. Well, you're going to say, look, because everybody drinks tea. Okay, so fair enough. It's a shared passion. We are far from the only country in the world that loves tea. But I'm going to argue that it means, oh, you're going to say, you're going to disagree with you disagreeing with me.
There is,
isn't that a
the
bit
whole
Brexit?
World over, the whole world over drinks a beverage called tea.
Or cha.
There's only one country I would contend that has a cuppa.
Hey, I like your language, right? Okay, so maybe closest to us is the Japanese in intellect. And obviously, they're far more sophisticated than us. Why are the Japanese so much more sophisticated than us, Roy Phillip? What is that all about?
Well, they embedded in their culture has been tea drinking for like two millennia.
Yeah, I mean they've got all that class around the ceremony and all that elegance and all the rest of it, while we're having, you know, a cup of builders.
David. Yeah, I couldn't disagree with you more on that front. The Japanese have their tea ceremonies, and as I said, they've been going like for millennia, and they're beautiful things to behold. But an afternoon tea is a thing of beauty and refinement in and of itself.
That is true.
I love going to a hotel, a nice tea shop. You know, you're mooching around a small little English town and somebody says, let's have an afternoon tea.
Yeah, let's go to Mrs. Miggins' tea shop.
Exactly. Couple of little cakes, scones, tea, some little finger sandwiches.
Stop. I'm feeling hungry. I've got to go. Do you know, I've told you that I'm on this course at the moment, this part-time undergraduate English mm-hmm. social history course, which I'm doing in the continuing education department at Oxford University. Thank you. It's fantastic. And I sit every so often, go to the Bodleian, all right? And I sit there and I, you know, do whatever I do. Why do I do that, Roy Field?
I don't know, David. Why do you do that?
I'm going to tell you. But just by the Bodleian, there is the University Church. And at one end of the University Church is the vaults. And in the vaults, there is a little tea shop where they serve a fruit scone with strawberry jam and a nice pot of tea. And I'm telling you, I mean, you know, I don't care anything about doing English social history. I can go and have a pot of tea whenever I like. Why, Roy Field, did Karl Marx never drink loose leaf tea?
Good heavens. Tea in tea bags, that's a relatively newish invention.
You don't know the answer, do you?
Invention. I don't know. No, I'm grasping.
Didn't drink loose leaf tea because property is theft.
Oh, that old joke. Okay.
I'm here all week. Anyway, it's a great gag, isn't it? What's brown and sticky?
I don't know, David.
A stick, Roy Field. Enough of this class humour. So let's go back. So I was going to tell you a bit of history before you went to the end point and started talking about doilies. Let's talk about doilies. Tea, earliest evidence? Any idea?
I'm going to say Confucius probably did some Confucianing around tea. So I'm going to go 100 BCE.
It's not bad, actually. When is Confucius?
You know what? I don't know exactly, but around about that time.
Anyway, earliest evidence was, in fact, found in the tomb of Li Qi, who lived between 188 BC and 141.
Oh, my God. Look how close I was.
Not bad. It was found in the form of a discarded Yorkshire tea bag just beside a piece of baked potato.
Well done. That's quite good.
And then 9th century tea drinking, vital part of Japanese culture, as we discussed. So, they're early to it. Dutch, 1606, the first consignment of tea was shipped from China to Holland. It was a drink for the wealthy for ages and ages. Indian tea didn't start until after 1834, which is where we come to the dark side of the tea trade. Roy Field, you know what I'm going to talk about, don't you?
I suspect, but I'm going to be sit here with in rapt attention. So,
okay, that's
so
very good. Most unlike you. You ill, or you're multitasking at the moment?
Yeah, I'm on my iPhone.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, so we get the Opium War. So there's a triangular trade which develops around about the 1830s. So there is a lack of silver, like a lack of bullion around. So if the East India Company decide what they'll do is they'll export woolens. So the point about the lack of bullion is they can't buy the tea. So what they'll do is they'll create this triangular trade. So we'll export good British woolens to India. They will grow opium in India and we'll sell that to China. The result is the extraordinary business of the British invading China or making war in China in order to force them to buy opium. I mean, it's got to be one of the most outrageously appalling episodes in British history. Anyway, that creates a tea-growing culture in India eventually, because they're thinking, why do we buy all this tea from China? Why instead can't we grow tea in India? And actually, they stole lots of tea and brought it back, but then it died until a wild version of tea was found in Assam, and Assam tea was born as a commercial activity. And by 1888, it was more popular than Chinese tea. And we like Assam tea, don't we? Because it takes milk very well, very strong.
Mm.
So then it grows in England, and it grows in England for a few reasons. One of them to do with alcohol. Why would the growth of the popularity of tea be connected with alcohol, Royfield? Do you like the way I'm making this interactive?
You're doing a somewhat leaden-headed attempt at trying to make it interactive.
It's just because you're on your bloody iPhone. You know, if you get off your iPhone, you get with it.
I've come off it now. I don't know, David. How is alcohol connected to tea?
That's the kind of response I want. Because the temperance movement thought, hey, here's a way
of getting people to go to tea.
So you get teetotal, don't you? And all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Also, they think it's medicinal. And there's a bit of social climbing involved because it had been a posh drink. You know, the non-posh people, you know, like yourself, decide that they're what they'll do. They'll drink a bit of tea and they'll look smarter, you know. So, cool. So that's kind of the history. But to the English, the point is, actually, I read a book called Inglourious Empire. Have you read that? Mm-hmm.
No.
It's, you know, it's basically, you know, the horrors of the British Empire and the British India. But he gives us, after, you know, trashing us for, you know, 455 pages, for the last two pages, he gives us two benefits. One is about cricket, which he describes as rather delightfully, actually, as an Indian game accidentally invented by the English, which I thought was a great quote. And tea, because he loves the ceremony we put around tea. So I read all these 450 pages. The only things I took away from it was the fact that the English are good at drinking tea. For us, it's a magical substance, which is at once a sedative, you know, oh, I'll have a nice cup of tea to calm down, and a stimulant. Oh, I'll have a nice pick-me-up. Let's make me a cup of tea. Do you know what I mean?
Does that depend on the amount of sugar you put in it, though?
I don't know. I never put sugar in at all. I mean, sugar is a class identifier, isn't it?
Good heavens.
Don't you think?
Well, there you go. Tells you something about you and me, because I didn't actually know that.
Well, Kate Fox, in her book, you know, watching this, she reckons tea is a class thing. If you're drinking a strong, milky, sugary cup of tea, especially if it's alongside your savoury evening meal, that's working class, probably Yorkshire. Whereas if you're drinking a smoky Lapsang Souchong with no sugar or milk, we're talking class anxious middle classes.
No, okay. I'm going to stop you there because that, remember, at the top of the show, I said to you that tea is drunk all over the world, but there's only one place for a cuppa. For me, a cuppa involves milk.
Yeah.
And it is amazing for me, traveling around the world, that for the most part, people don't even know that is an option. Or if they do know it's an option, they're putting milk in with Earl Grey and crazy things like that, you know, which you just never do.
Yeah, you just never do. So, I mean, I must admit, that is a weird one, isn't it? Why do we put milk in?
Yeah, well, it's not even just weird. It's wrong. It's just totally wrong. So
it is. It's nice there, isn't it?
And even when you go to countries that are, you know, culturally closely aligned to ours, i.e. let's say Canada, you know, so there's my daughter, born in London, left when she was three, connected to her English roots, or at least so I thought, as well as her Jamaican roots and the Canadian heritage as well. And we were walking along a road in Ottawa about 6-7 months ago, and I said, let's go and have afternoon tea. She went, what's that, Dad?
Oh, no.
I beg your pardon. Right. So I had to, you know, give her a crash course in English culture, sir.
Excellent.
Right. So I took her into this wonderful hotel and this great kind of restaurant. And they treated her like a princess. You know, it was madam this, madam that.
Right. Excellent.
And she couldn't believe it that somebody actually took her chair and, you know, pushed it in as she sat down. She said, Dad, this is really posh. But you know what utterly floored me?
Yeah.
She said, I've never drunk tea before. I said, of course you have. Of course you have. She went, Dad, I never have. What do I do with this? I had to show her how to pour a cup of tea. Every week, she buys herself a pack of tea now. She loves a cuppa.
Excellent. Well done. I mean, that can't be. You know, you can't have an English heritage and not drink a nice cup of tea. It's true. So very it's also true. Posited to you, Roy Field, that the basic underpinning characteristic of the English character is social awkwardness, yeah? And I think
you have said that on many occasions, yeah. And I don't know if I quite agree with
it. Yeah, I know. You've kind of opted out because you're not socially awkward, but...
Maybe, if there is a point to you and I doing this show, it's because I'm not going to say that I am working class, but I came from working class roots. And you, sir, were like upper gentry.
Is that right? Nobody's ever been upper gentry before. But so, I mean, obviously, you know.
But
I mean,
how this plays out is with these subtle distinctions of actually what is English and Englishness. Yes. And you do the social awkwardness thing all the time.
Yeah, I do.
And I don't sign up for that. And then you talk about tea and I go, it's a cuppa. And we both know what each other is talking about, but we're coming at it from a slightly different angle.
I think that is true. But I mean, I think we all understand the cuppa. And certainly I used to work in a warehouse in a place called Anstey with Brian Granville and Mr. Burton. It was always Mr. Burton because he was kind of the boss. He was the warehouse manager. Yeah, and you had to have tea at a particular time. You know, you had tea breaks and all the rest of it. So there we'd sit. Nobody knew what to say. Because, you know, it was an awkward situation. Somebody would make a pot of tea and then somebody would be able to make the same joke every day for, you know, upwards of 9 months. Don't call it names, Dave. It's too weak to fight back. Okay. Or the classic, that's barely strong enough to crawl out of the mouth. You know, it's an icebreaker. Everybody can talk around a nice cup of tea, can't they?
No, it absolutely is. It's a social connector. And just the whole transactional nature of it, how do you take your tea?
Yes.
No. Three sugars, you know, two tea bags, easy on the milk, you know, type of thing. It is. It's literally the opening gambit on any social interaction.
A classic, actually, as it comes.
Mm.
Or hot and wet.
No.
You don't do that. You've got a particular type, is it?
You've got to nail your colours to some kind of mask. Right. It tells you a lot about that person. We're getting back onto the slight class thing now. There is taste, refinement, and then there is class or class, right? And somebody who says, however it comes, right, you know, is not somebody I can sip a cuppa with. David,
is that right?
You know? No, have something about you. You've got to have something about you. Have some hard and fast opinions. Because it's not like, you know, if you go around to somebody's house and they're cooking you a meal, they might ask you what your dietary requirements are, but fundamentally you're in their hands. And because that is just common decency. You don't say,
"Yeah,
I'm coming around to your house, I want you to cook me this."
Yeah. Although, however, that's an interesting thought, actually. I must try it next time. Sorry, I don't want your shepherd's pie. I want a side of beef.
Done exactly. Nice. You just don't say
that'd
that.
That'd be rude, mate. That'd be rude.
However, you know, the lingua franca of hot beverages in England is tea. So that's taken as a given. So you can then say to your host how you want your tea.
Yeah.
That's totally fine.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, make it strong. Yeah, whatever. Mm. Yeah, I totally agree. And it would be good to come back to the tea, you know, the physical thing of tea, actually, rather than just the drink, because you introduced the topic of conversation quite rightly. So if you have, you know, it's a meal as well. You know, when you talk about a meal, the Waldorf, you know, you're thinking about an environment like the Waldorf Hotel where you go and you get dressed up. Somebody once took me to the Ritz for tea. We had a customer come over, hit well heeled, and she took me to the Ritz. That, I have to tell you, I mean, that really was something else. So it's there is an element of the Japanese tea ceremony. I know it's nothing as sophisticated as that, but there is something about it being an event, a process, and you have doilies. Does anybody else in the world use doilies apart from us? Do you know what a doily is?
Well, of course I know what a doily is.
It's my grandmother.
But I think the answer is going to be yes and no. Yes, in that many cultures adorn their tables with frilly things to beautify them. But I'm guessing that none of them actually call them a doily. They have their own kind of native word for
it. Right, but you think they have things that look like lace doilies?
I wouldn't see why not.
Yeah, you're probably right. So if you have tea at 4 o'clock, what do you expect?
I'm expecting, well, it depends. Am I at home or am I out somewhere?
Wherever.
Well, if I'm out, it's afternoon tea, and I want that tea to come with something. A scone, a bit of cake, you know, nice little tray,
cucumber sandwiches.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. If you have tea at 6 o'clock, what are you expecting?
Just a cup of tea.
No. You're expecting beans.
Oh, David.
You're expecting food, aren't you?
No, you are. Well, but okay.
You're expecting proper supper?
Yes and no. Yes and no. All right. So, again, we run into a north-south divide, immigrant family, you know, non-immigrant family thing. We never had tea growing up. My English white friends had tea. We had dinner.
Right.
We always had dinner.
Have supper then.
We never had supper.
Because I'm told supper's posher than dinner.
Supper is super posh.
Is it?
Yes.
No, I am so posh, aren't I?
Yeah, supper is super posh. And there's that whole weird thing about having school dinner ladies, and of course, school dinner ladies serve you lunch.
Yes, that's true. That's a bit
odd,
man.
It's all screwed up.
Hey, talking about dinner ladies, do you remember that at school? Did you have that massive trays of sponge with a bit of jam, coconut on the top, and lumpy custard?
Oh, David, that was the food of dreams.
I keep saying, I must make some of that.
I'll tell you what I used to love as well, which I didn't have any approximation of it at home when my mum was cooking. Blancmange and prunes.
Blancmange! Actually, I'm not sure about prunes, but blancmange. Is that what they call milk jelly? Did you have that as well?
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. So kind of pink, you know, milk jelly, you know, and it just wobbled in your bowl as you were taking it back to your table.
We're moving away from blancmange. But yes, fantastic. The jilt melly, fantastic.
Mm.
Anyway, so there is also a close relationship between tea and DIY. I think you'll agree, yeah? How many cups of tea does it make for an Englishman to make a second set of shelves?
I'll give you that.
That was a free mug of tea task, that sort of thing, you know. Almost any shelves I made were about, you know, a 5,000 mug of tea task. So look, there it is. That's the proposition, Roy Field. I'm making a proposition to you.
I feel that you've been somewhat freeform with your argument this week, because you know it's such an obvious one that you've not really structured this well at all, have you?
No, I'm sorry. Could I formulate?
You know, you've just gone. You've basically just come onto the podcast and just gone tea. Shake your hands. And it will go
point,
in,
isn't it? I mean, it's a slam dunk, isn't it? I mean, come on, you know,
it is. And because of that, you've put absolutely no intellectual rigor behind it at all. Come on, David.
I've let the listeners down.
Well, it's because you know it's going in. To be fair to you, say no intellectual rigor is a bit harsh. Little, is what I say. Because you did say it started off in China to India.
A little harsh. I gave you history.
But other than that,
we're talking about our tea thing, actually, because I didn't explain that. It's true to say, and it's very interesting. So there are two words for char, for tea, one based on the Chinese char and one based on the Indian tea. I think that's right, isn't it? And so depending on where you are and how you got your tea delivered to you is how you pronounce it. So if it came by land, so through the Silk Road from China, then you're going to call it a derivative of char. If it came by sea, it would have probably been later and come from India, and therefore it's based on the Indian word for tea, which is fascinating. So there's one exception. So most places in Europe have a name based on tea. And there's one exception, which is Portugal, where they have a name based on char, because it was shipped from Formosa, which was Chinese, obviously. So there you go. It's fascinating. The map on the Facebook site.
Awesome.
Roy Field, wrap up for us then.
What about seeing what people thought of last episode's toing and froing?
Let's do that. Ah, Birmingham, the Golden City, City of Dreams. There were a few breathtaking things that came out of the episode on Birmingham. Firstly, there was the fact that anyone would suggest Birmingham as a thing that made England. And then, well, no, that was pretty much it, actually. Absences, gentle listener, mean that you have me rather than Luke or Fiona, which is obviously something which will make our hearts grow fonder, but it has the benefit of me being able to insult Royfield without him being able to strike back. There was actually one other breathtaking thing about the Birmingham episode, which was there was a shocking amount of support for the Birmingham Enlightenment. The what? Although there was a tinge of terror as well, actually. So Duncan confessed to the group, unburdening to us all of his fear of Royfield, and his fear also that following we would have 800 episodes following every town of England and how, I don't know, Driffield and Farley Wallop are in fact the hidden beating heart of England. Ken introduced the topic of Watford Gap, which is of course one of those fault lines, and we could have a hack at the north-south divide thing there. But look, I shudder at the thought of Darlington as I speak. Although, you know, as far as railways are concerned. Stuart gave us scorn for the idea, but in his scorning, he did then remind us of ELO, for which, it's okay, Stuart, I forgive you, but, you know, there you go. But also Carrot. How could I forget Carrot? Loved Carrot. Car insurance claims, all that sort of thing. Also, Stuart and Royfield got going, and that turned out to be something of a spectator sport, with a full and frank exchange of views. Very polite, well-informed, all that sort of thing. Bit of a ding-dong about the relative merits of Manchester and Birmingham. Then we got UB40 came up. Car making, Durran Durran, who I always assumed came from Essex at the time. And most important of all, of course, the Triumph Stag. Now that was a car and a half. Anyway, Stuart's a Geordie, so you can confidently expect an episode before long on the worldwide cultural impact of South Shields. I forget, but I think the episode on Brum might also have included me relating how I managed to confuse Black Country with Brum, for which I apologise, since it is a sort of error calculated to irritate the Black Country. So, I thought I'd end by giving you a brief insight into Yam Yam, if you're not aware of the accent. So here's a snippet of a song to finish up, which actually, on the way, gives you an insight into one use of the word tea.
Yam Yam. Some people say Yam Yam Yam, and that I sound funny, but I'm just a Black Country chap and I don't sound like a Brummie. Some people eat their dinner while I just eat my tea, cause I'm just a Black Country chap and I don't sound like a Brummie. I wake up every day, it's a nightmare. I've got now 6 pack, got nowhere. I'm skint but I'm down like a fuss. Oh yeah, I got a car so I gotta catch a bus. People around here, they just all look complaining. Two bloody opts if it ain't pissing raining. Some people say I'm yam yam, and then I sound funny, but I'm just a Black Country chap and I don't sound like a Brummie. Some people eat their dinner.
Thank you for that, as always, tip-top in Bristol fashion. And it's nice to see that people are still prepared to throw their opinions around on our Facebook group, which is the things that made England. Now,
isn't it ship-shape in Bristol fashion rather than
I'm mixing my idioms. It's fine. It's very, very English of me. Now, David, one thing which we should invite our listeners to do is to go on to Apple iTunes and write us a review, because it's a very important way of us exposing the things that made England to new ears, to new listeners. So why don't you go on there?
I don't like all this begging and pleading.
Again, this is the class divide. I'm just rolling my sleeves up and doing what has to be done, and you're being all mealy-mouthed socially uncomfortable about it. So anyway, right, go on there, write a review, say how wonderful I was, and you can neglect to mention David in the review at all. So we thank you if you've already done that for us, and thank you for being part of our Facebook group. That's me. I'm just about expired. Next time we'll talk about something else, and you'll see coherent, cogent research and pointed points put by me, and David will just come on and just freestyle and give it the jazz hands.
No, just get insulted here and get called posh. Told I'm not rigorous. Anyway, goodbye, everybody. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.
Cool.
And these are the things that made England.
And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.